U.S. federal court rules Donald Trump is not immune from prosecution on charges he tried to overturn the 2020 election.
The D.C. Circuit said if Donald Trump did in fact attempt to overturn this election, he should be prosecuted.
Hamas responds to the latest ceasefire hostage release deal.
It seems to be a little over the top.
And using AI to figure out when an earthquake is gonna hit.
Predicting earthquakes is the holy grail of the whole seismology, so people have been trying to do it for more than 100 years.
Today is Wednesday, February 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. A major development in the case against former President Donald Trump, a U.S. federal appeals court has ruled Trump does not have immunity from charges he plotted to overturn his 2020 election defeat. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports this brings Trump a step closer to an unprecedented criminal trial.
The ruling is a rebuke to the former president, who is once again seeking the White House as he fends off numerous criminal cases.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
The election subversion case landed before the three-judge appeals panel after Trump was criminally charged by special counsel Jack Smith with a number of illegal schemes to try and stay in power after losing at the polls. Trump denies wrongdoing and claims he's immune from prosecution for acts taken while president.
A president has to have immunity. And the other thing is, I did nothing wrong. We did nothing wrong.
In oral arguments last month, Trump's attorneys asserted that presidents could only be criminally prosecuted if they were first impeached and convicted by lawmakers in Congress. Judges seemed skeptical of that broad claim of immunity. One judge asked Trump's attorney if that immunity extended to murdering a president's political rivals.
Could a president who ordered SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival who was not impeached, would he be subject to criminal prosecution?
If he were impeached and convicted first. So
your answer is no.
An attorney for the U.S. Department of Justice argued granting Trump immunity would set a dangerous precedent.
The president has a unique constitutional role, but he is not above the law.
The indictment brought by the special counsel accuses Trump of using false claims of voter fraud to pressure state lawmakers, Justice Department officials, and then Vice President Mike Pence to thwart the certification of the election results.
Multiple capital injuries!
Those lies fueled Trump supporters' violent assault on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, in an effort to stop the certification of the election. In Tuesday's decision, the judges wrote they cannot accept the claim that a president has, quote, unbounded authority to commit crimes, nor that the executive has carte blanche to violate the rights of individual citizens to vote and have their votes count. His immunity argument was previously rejected by a trial judge in December, prompting Trump to appeal. Trump is almost certain to appeal Tuesday's decision as well, all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Even if his claims are ultimately rejected, he may achieve his aim of delaying trial until after the November election. If Trump wins the election, he could seek to pardon himself or direct the Justice Department to shut down the case.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. Joining us to talk about this now is Thomas Wolfe, Director of Democracy Initiatives at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. All right, so big picture, the court says he's not immune from prosecution. What does that mean?
As has now been well documented, both by the news media and the Congressional Committee on January 6th, then President Trump participated in a wide-ranging and very aggressive conspiracy to try to overturn the results of the 2020 elections. And those machinations, among other things, led to the events on January 6th when members of Congress were attacked by pro-Trump protesters. Since then, there have been a number of different cases that have in some way or another tried to hold Trump accountable for his attempts to overturn the election, and then also inciting the January 6th riots. This week, there have been two major legal developments in two of the cases that are part of this broader attempt to hold Trump accountable. Today, the D.C. Circuit, which is the federal court of appeals that sits in Washington, D.C., issued a ruling that Trump was not immune from criminal prosecution for trying to overturn the results of the election. That's a ruling that comes out of special counsel Jack Smith's federal prosecution of Trump in the D.C. federal courts.
Saying he's not immune, what does that mean?
The D.C. Circuit's ruling means that we have now cleared one more substantial hurdle to Trump's trial in D.C. going forward for attempting to overturn the election. That trial has been on hold since December while this issue of Trump's immunity was being appealed. If Trump doesn't go to the Supreme Court very quickly to seek Supreme Court appeal of that ruling, the case could return to the trial court, preparation for trial could start up again, and Trump could likely be in the courtroom sometime in the early summer.
So just to try again, you know, the majority of our audience is outside the United States. Try to put it into perspective, the significance from a historic perspective.
Yep. Criminal prosecution of Trump for trying to overthrow the election raised this question that the courts had never weighed in on before, which is whether a president could be prosecuted for crimes he committed while he was in office. Now, this is very critical to understand because former President Trump, the way he talks about things, he tends to kind of personalize everything and make it seem like it's very much a persecution of himself, and as if this is sort of a deeply radical thing because he's being prosecuted. The core thing to keep in mind here is that ultimately the historic and unprecedented thing is a former president who lost a free and fair election attempting to hold on to power and disrupt the peaceful transfer of power by any means necessary. We had the 2020 election. Joe Biden and Donald Trump squared off. Joe Biden won. That's the fact. Donald Trump has spent the last 4 years trying to convince everyone that he actually won back in the winter of 2020-2021. He did not want to give up power, even though the voters decided that he should no longer be in power. And so that's really the deep wrong historic thing here, is we've never before had a president of the United States say that he's not going to respect the will of the voters and he's not going to respect the word of the Constitution. We really should not downplay the significance of what the D.C. Circuit said today. The D.C. Circuit said if Donald Trump did in fact attempt to overturn this election, he should be prosecuted because the crimes that he's committed are foundational to American democracy, resisting the transfer of power, and rejecting the voice of the voters. So every time we hear from Donald Trump that he's being kind of uniquely persecuted through this prosecution, I think we should keep in mind that the reason why he's being prosecuted is because he attempted to silence the voice of tens of millions of Americans who voted properly and determined that he should no longer hold power and that we should continue having a democracy.
Thomas Wolfe, Director of Democracy Initiatives at the Brennan Center for Justice. There is another case pending in another Trump case. On Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments on Colorado's attempt to keep Trump off its presidential election ballot. We'll talk to Thomas Wolfe about that on tomorrow's show. It looks like a deal to address U.S. southern border security and to fund aid to Ukraine and fund Israel is dead. That's what U.S. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said on Tuesday. VOA's Catherine Gibson has this story.
$60 billion in aid to Ukraine, $14 billion in aid to Israel, plus the fate of thousands of asylum seekers and U.S. border security are in jeopardy as a vote on a $118 billion bipartisan security agreement appears likely to fail in the U.S. Senate later this week. U.S. President Joe Biden.
The American people want a solution that puts an end to the empty political rhetoric, which has failed to do anything for so long. We have to get the resources to the border to get the job done.
Biden making the case for the bill that took 4 months of negotiations in the U.S. Senate. After Senate Republicans asked for changes to the U.S. immigration system in return for their votes to pass aid to Ukraine.
For those Republicans in Congress who think they can oppose funding for Ukraine and not be held accountable, history is watching.
A growing number of Senate Republicans say they were left out of the negotiations and that the bill did not go far enough to address their concerns about border security. Republican Senator Mike Lee.
We should have included border security metrics so that Ukraine aid release would be linked to the achievement of certain sustained border security benchmarks.
And many Senate Republicans are reluctant to vote for the measure, knowing it has an uncertain future in the Republican-majority U.S. House. Mike Johnson is the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives.
They sent us a supplemental funding proposal that has immigration reform, but not real border security reform, and so that's why it's a non-starter. They did not fulfill the requirements and the needs of the country.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the vote will move forward, putting Republicans on record for rejecting a compromise.
How could you negotiate with people like this? We tried. That's my job. I always believe in bipartisanship. But first, they say they can't pass Ukraine funding without border provisions. Now, they can't pass Ukraine funding with border provisions. Well, which one is it?
The lead Democratic negotiator on the bill said Republicans are making an election year calculation to vote against a bipartisan agreement. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy.
President Trump has made it perfectly clear that he does not want any bipartisan solution to the border, that he wants the border to remain chaotic because he thinks it helps him politically.
A standalone Israel aid bill failed in the House Tuesday after House Democrats said it should be considered along with Ukraine aid and border security funding. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Also from the U.S. Congress on Tuesday.
On this vote, the yeas are 214 and the nays are 216. The resolution is not adopted.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas will not be impeached, a vote to do so failing by a razor-thin margin, when some Republicans joined Democrats in voting no. Mayorkas has been in Republicans' crosshairs over immigrants crossing into the United States along the southern border.
In a dramatic setback, House Republicans failed to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas.
On this vote, the yeas are 214 and the nays are 216. The resolution is not adopted.
A few GOP lawmakers refused to go along with the party's plan. Republicans like Tennessee's Mark Green blame Mayorkas for the border crisis.
He no longer deserves to keep his job.
But Mississippi Representative Benny Thompson called the effort to oust Mayorkas as a sham designed to please former President Trump.
And it's a baseless attack on a dedicated public servant.
The House is likely to revisit plans to impeach Mayorkas, but next steps are highly uncertain. Norman Hall, Washington.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Three Senegalese opposition lawmakers were arrested on Tuesday. Fallout from Parliament's move to delay a presidential vote by 10 months. The new election date is December 15th. A door panel that blew off a Boeing 737 MAX 9 jet mid-flight on January 5th appeared to be missing four key bolts. That's according to a preliminary report from U.S. investigators. The first official look into how that accident happened. Boeing's Commercial Airplanes Unit says it will look at the preliminary results from the National Transportation Safety Board's investigation of the 737 MAX 9 blowout and assess whether or not to take additional action around the door plug.
We find the defendant guilty of involuntary manslaughter.
A Michigan jury on Tuesday convicted the mother of a teenager of manslaughter. the teen shot four classmates to death at a high school near Detroit. Prosecutors argued she bore responsibility because she and her husband gave their son the gun and ignored warning signs of violence. Hamas has responded to the latest ceasefire and hostage release proposal. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, on a lightning tour of the Middle East, said Washington was reviewing Hamas's response and that he would discuss it with Israeli officials when he visits Israel on Wednesday.
The best path forward, the most effective path forward right now to get an extended period of calm and to work toward an end to the conflict is through an agreement on the hostages. And that's what we're intensely focused on with our partners here in Qatar, Egypt, working with Israel. And of course, now that we have the response from Hamas to the proposal that was put on the table a week or so ago, we're going to be very intensely focused on that.
In Yemen, the leader of Yemen's Houthis, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, said on Tuesday that the group will further escalate if the Israeli attack on Gaza does not stop. And the head of the United Nations Assistance Mission for Iraq, Janine Hennes Plechar, said that with Iraq cloaked in an already complex tapestry of challenges, it's of the greatest importance that all attacks cease.
For Iraq to further continue on its path of stability and progress, an enabling environment will prove essential. And such an environment requires restraint from all sides. Yes, indeed, from Iraq's armed actors. And as might be expected, restraint from Iraq's neighbors and other countries is just as crucial.
She said messaging by strikes only serves to recklessly heighten tensions. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Sebastian Piñera, the former president of Chile, died in a helicopter crash on Tuesday. The helicopter carrying Piñera and three others plunged into a lake in southern Chile. 74-year-old was pronounced dead by rescue personnel at the scene. The other passengers survived. Chilean President Gabriel Boric declared 3 days of mourning for his predecessor.
Chile somos todos y debemos soñarlo, dibujarlo.
He's saying, we send a big hug to his family and loved ones in these hard times. Also from Chile, the death toll from weekend wildfires rose to 131 on Tuesday as forensic teams carried out the painstaking process of identifying the dead. There are an estimated 20,000 people now homeless. Firefighters are still searching for victims. That deadly Pacific storm that left Los Angeles neighborhoods strewn with rock and debris on Tuesday following torrential rains triggered mudslides. One resident said she believes it's a result of climate change.
We are having these record highs in the summertime and then these incredible storms that we've never had before that they're calling, once every 100-year storms, and we've had two of them since August. So that's my belief is, of course, it's climate change.
The U.S. National Weather Service said more than 25 centimeters of rain had fallen since Sunday across the L.A. area, the second largest city in the United States, with much more expected before the downpour is due to taper off later this week. The NASA PACE mission we told you about on Tuesday's show was postponed because of weather. It's now scheduled for Wednesday. The launch includes a satellite that will help scientists learn more about the Earth's oceans, atmosphere, and climate. And finally, what would you give to know that an earthquake is coming? It hits the brass ring for scientists who study earthquakes. Now, researchers at the University of Texas are using artificial intelligence to make that a reality. Deanna Mitchell has this story from Austin, Texas.
Devastating earthquakes strike all over the world without warning. Sergey Fommel is a professor of geophysics at the University of Texas at Austin.
Predicting earthquakes is the holy grail of the whole seismology, so people have been trying to do it for more than 100 years.
A team at UT developed a data-driven model for forecasting natural destructive earthquakes using artificial intelligence and big data analysis, and applied it to a real-time earthquake prediction competition that lasted 2 years. The team leader, Yang-Keng Chen, an assistant professor at UT's Bureau of Economic Geology, says they were able to forecast earthquakes with an accuracy of 70%, including magnitude, location, and occurrence, winning the competition.
Because of the competition, we have a very good data set and a test bed. Most importantly, that's a real-time test bed.
Chen said the AI model takes input and output predictions and finds patterns, something too difficult for humans to do on their own. The university team works with TexNet, the Texas Seismological Network, where Alexandro Savaitis is a principal investigator.
We could identify which are the parameters of the ground motion or the electromagnetic sensor system is changing prior to the earthquakes. And because of that, we can see when in the future those parameters are changing again, and when they change, then we expect to have an earthquake.
The team said it has predicted some earthquakes a week in advance, but most were much closer to the quake.
The most accurate prediction may come just immediately before the earthquake, but for early warning systems, it is sufficient to have just a little bit of time.
The team is using more real-time test beds with the hope of forecasting earthquakes further in advance. Dina Mitchell, VOA News, Austin, Texas.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has begun its response to the killing in late January of three American service members in Jordan by Iran-backed militias. The U.S. forces are in the region as part of a coalition dedicated to the defeat of ISIS. On February 2nd, the United States conducted airstrikes on 85 targets in Iraq and Syria that have been used by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and affiliated groups to attack U.S. forces. "This is the start of our response," said U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin in a statement. "The president has directed additional actions to hold the IRGC and affiliated militias accountable for their attacks on U.S. and coalition forces." At a press briefing, Pentagon spokesperson Major General Pat Ryder described the facilities used by the IRGC and related militias targeted in the U.S. strikes.
"Command and control operations centers, intelligence centers, rockets, missiles, unmanned aerial vehicle storage and logistics and munition supply chain facilities. Our focus here is on attacking capability that have been used by these groups."
In a separate defensive move against Iran-backed proxies, on February 3rd, the United States and the United Kingdom, with support from a coalition of allies, conducted another series of proportionate attacks on Houthi targets in Yemen. The defensive action, the third time the coalition hit targets inside Yemen, is a response to the months-long Houthi attacks on international shipping and U.S. naval vessels in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden. The United States also took unilateral actions in self-defense to destroy missile launchers and unmanned surface vessels prepared for employment by the Houthis. "The focus here," said Major General Ryder, "is disrupting and degrading their abilities to conduct these kinds of attacks."
"We will continue to call on them to stop immediately, but if they don't, we will continue to take appropriate actions to not only defend international shipping and mariners transiting the Red Sea, but also continuing to degrade and disrupt their capabilities."
Major General Ryder emphasized the United States does not seek to escalate conflict in the Middle East. The U.S., he said, reiterates its calls on Iran to cease supporting the destabilizing actions of its proxies. And Major General Ryder warned, "We'll continue to take appropriate action to protect our forces."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.